Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archives weekly series that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. This week on From the Vault, we conclude our celebration of Black History Month. We'll talk to the Grammy, Emmy, Tony, and Webby award-winning and nominated songwriter multimedia artist, Allie Willis, who co-hosted the Sound of Soul Adopt-a-School Party and fundraiser with the Pacifica Radio Archives at her Los Angeles home, Willis Wonderland.
If ever there was a cause that seemed perfectly organic for me to link up to, it was with Pacifica Radio Archives, who had this treasure trove.
And now we turn to a conversation with the Queen of Kitsch and Siren of Soul, Allie Willis. On February 22, 2010, the Archives and Allie Willis co-hosted the Sound of Soul Adopt a School Party and fundraiser for the Pacifica Radio Archives at her Los Angeles home, Willis Wonderland. Allie and her friends sponsored over 40 schools with the exclusive new Allie Willis Sound of Soul collection, which features 68 historic recordings preserved specifically in honor of Black History Month. Here's a conversation I had with Allie and also some highlights from the most significant recordings preserved. Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, and I'm here at Willis Wonderland with the incredible Allie Willis, just after the week of, after our Allie Willis and the Archives Sound of Soul Adopt a School Party at Willis Wonderland. And since then, we've dubbed you the Queen of Kitsch and the Siren of Soul from that.
Well, I've long been the Queen of Kitsch, and I certainly have been a Siren of Soul. So thank you very much for that.
No, I think, you know, this collaboration between Allie Willis, this incredible composer, artist, multimedia artist, singer-songwriter, the everything artist, a true artist, actually, a Renaissance artist. I think the collaboration is really brilliant because of your interest in Black culture and the music that you've written, your artistry, and the history that's in the archives, and the fact that it's audio recording. Like, you and your friends, you know, the people that came to the party are of the music industry, so they care about sound and the preservation of our legacy.
You know, for me, growing up in Detroit, becoming a songwriter who to this day does not know how to read, write, or play music, yet I write every note. Coming from Detroit, listening to Black music on the radio, very specifically Martha Jean the Queen, who, if you talk to almost any like incredible Motown songwriter, Holland Dozier Holland, they'll all cite that DJ as just being, you know, instrumental in their life. So I'm someone whose sound affected so much that it, you know, it became a passion continuing in my life, sent me toward a certain career that even I don't know what I'm doing, I can do it because the sound is so imbued in me. And people that I collaborate with, or the cast of The Color Purple, which, you know, as you know, coincided with when we did the Sound of Soul party, The Color Purple, which is a musical I co-wrote with Brenda Russell, Stephen Bray, and Marsha Norman.
And was nominated for a Tony Award. Thank you very much.
11. Thank you very much. Just The Color Purple, you know, is very much about getting in tune with finding your own sound, basically. Which is what finding yourself is. It's a vibration in the world, you know? So I think that everyone who was at this particular Sound of Soul party, even, you know, our first one, but this one especially because the show was in town, it was an absolute perfect collision of purposes and of philosophies. And the collection you have, which, as you know, I just came in to do an interview right after The Color Purple opened. And then you took me into the vault just as a little prize trip, you know. And I completely freaked with, you know, miles and miles of 24-track tape with, you know, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, blah, 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 blah. People that I never even knew were on tape, you know. Going back, like, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois or Marcus Garvey, or, you know, things that people can't even, you know, hear. And I'm a party thrower at heart. I get to combine all the art forms I work in and do these kind of conceptual events. So if ever there was a cause that seemed perfectly organic for me to link up to, it was with Pacifica Radio Archives, who had this treasure trove.
You and I have never seen democracy. All we've seen is hypocrisy.
I am somebody.
I do not believe that a few people should control the wealth of any land.
We are not begging for our own freedom. It is up to us to take it.
You know, when you go to jail for a righteous cause, you can accept the inconveniences of jail with a kind of inner sense of calm and an inner sense of peace.
Sing, sin we, thin gin we, jazz June we, die sin.
I would have to know once and for all what rights I had as a human being, even in Montgomery, Alabama.
And again, the name of the drama is Freedom.
Thou shalt not believe that the world supports the United States.
If this society of yours is a great society, God knows I would hate to live in a bad
one. I think that the human race does command its own destiny, and that destiny can eventually embrace the stars.
And one only other thing I'll throw in is that I had the great fortune to be friends with James Brown. And we were introduced actually by BMI, you know, the songwriting, that's who, you know, collects your royalties. And we just got along incredibly well as friends. And I had a lot of pieces of black memorabilia, very specifically 60s and 70s, massive afros, you know, height of black power. I loved that whole thing from a style and music place. And he, when he was looking around my house, even though that wasn't the main part of my collection, he said, you must continue to collect the black pop culture stuff because our people, I'm white, by the way, but our people, said James Brown, haven't seen this stuff. There was no money to distribute these products. So one of my favorite things I have, for instance, is a game called Slang-a-Lang, which is black bingo. Instead of B-I-N-G-O, it's B-L-A-C-K. And the, you know, center square is, you know, we are beautiful people, and i.e. free. And you know, then the squares are anything from, like, you know, Harlem, Cornbread, Cadillac, Right On, Soul Sister, whatever, you know, you kind of build your bingo lines like that. And that was made in Detroit in 1969. And he, you know, James Brown said, I bet you that never got farther than Cleveland because there was no money. So if you keep preserving this stuff, you should turn it into a museum, which is, I guess, what happened.
It's what you live on.
Well, it's where I live, but the house is very lived in. It's not lived in like it's a museum. You know, I now have the Allie Willis Museum of Kitsch,
AWMOK.com.
Yes, right. Allie Willis Museum of Kitsch, thank you. Where there's tons of, you know, black stuff, all kinds of stuff.
You know, as rare as the pieces that you have in the house that are online at thealmach.com, is the marriage of the audio that the archives have, the kitsch that you have in black culture, and the guests that were here. What I was really impressed with was that idea that not only did the young people that were here not ever see those things of your pop culture, but they'd actually never heard the recordings that we're trying to preserve.
Absolutely.
So the main point of this party was to adopt a school. Now that 2 years ago, you and your friends, our friends now, adopted each individual tape, we got them digitized into CD. Now what do we do with it? Well, we want to send them to schools, into the libraries, so that the primary resource materials are studied and then be used in the classrooms. We can't wait 10 years for the history to be written. It's there. So I loved that the guests were engaged with the pop culture museum as well as the idea and the cause of preserving that history that they'd never really experienced.
And these tapes, I think the audio tapes, are an incredible representation of pop culture. That's, I mean, what was so great about it. There wasn't anything heavy at all about the evening, you know. It was like, it was, you know, 1972 and we were at Wattstack's, you know. I mean, that's exactly what it was like, which is exactly the kind of environment I wanted to create.
What do you want? What do black folk really want? What do the Negroes want? Nobody asked that question. Anybody else in America? Just black folk. Remember Malcolm X said when they asked him, Malcolm, what do Negroes really want? Malcolm said, I want what you want. I'm the person you think you are. What do you want? You want love for your children? That's what I want. You want good schools? That's what I want. Health care? That's what I want. Job at a living wage? That's what I want. That's the reason why you engage in white flight. That's why you're going up to Oregon and Washington and keeping your distance from peoples of color. Because you want the same thing I do. So you don't need to ask me the question like we want something special flying in from Jupiter. It's clear what folk want. It's clear what we don't have.
And then having these audio tapes, which are something that no one else has privy to, really, until we digitize them and get them out there. Just added such a legitimacy and authenticity to everything that was going on. And I think so many of the things that are on these tapes, like I went to an incredible civil rights, it was right after the killings of, you know, Andrew Goodman, and, you know, in 1963. It was photographs taken around, I guess, the Freedom Riders going, white and black. And it was everyone who had taken photographs.
This is at the Skirball?
At the Skirball.
Right, the Skirball.
If it just closed, you've only missed it by a week or something. Unbelievable photos. And I went to see it, and I was walking around with, you know, one of the directors of the museum. And I said, you know, this is such a shame. I didn't know this was going up, because Pacifica Radio Archives absolutely has the soundtrack that goes along. And I don't mean music that was popular in 1963. I mean the conversations that were going on when the photos were being taken. You know, they thought that was nice and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then they came to this party Monday night, and they just went, oh, my God.
Yeah, I couldn't count the seconds how quickly it took for her to get that business card out of her pocket and put it in my hand to say, we have to talk.
Unbelievable, and I've been begging, you know. But no, she's got an incredible sensibility. But that's how rare these tapes are. That if a museum, an actual museum who researched all of this, had no idea that there was a matching soundtrack, because that would have made, you know, this is a traveling exhibit.
Right, and that's why it's so, the recordings are so rare, because the organization that they come from is still so far into the non-corporate sector that it doesn't really get out into the popular culture still. So the recordings, for me, as you say, that they sort of are the soundtrack of the movement, and it's not just the musical soundtrack. It's not white people interviewing black people either. It's actually to the point of, first it was, we're interviewing you, what are you people like? Yeah. Then it was, here's the microphone for yourself, you tell us what it's like. And that was actually the first time that any media organization gave the microphone to a people that were oppressed, which is why the conversations are so immediate, like unmediated and loose.
I am somebody. God's child. I may not have a job, but I am.
I am.
Somebody.
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 I may be black, but
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may not have an education, but I am. Somebody.
Somebody.
You may not respect me, but I am. Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be a Puerto Rican, but I am. Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be an Indian,
and
my land was stolen, but
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
Maybe a Spanish American,
but
I am. Somebody.
Somebody.
God
is my father.
Every man
is
my brother.
I cannot allow
hatred, malice, racism,
militarism,
are none of the things separate men from God.
Keep me from knowing
Every man is my brother. That's what we live by in Resurrection City.
In no particular order, the great Alice Walker, who wrote the book of The Color Purple, Esther Phillips, Martin Luther King Jr. I love that Esther Phillips came before Martin Luther King Jr. Mandela, Rosa Parks, Muhammad Ali, Leroy Jones, Gwendolyn Brooks, Marcus Garvey, Langston Hughes, Angela Davis, Dick Gregory.
Dick, why did you go to Birmingham?
Well, I guess for the same reason I went to Greenwood, Mississippi.
Okay, why'd you go to Mississippi at all in the first place?
Well, as I read the account of actually what was going on in these areas in the South, and think of the three kids that I have, and knowing that the people that's breaking down the barriers down south, and not only breaking them down for themselves, but breaking them down for myself, my wife, and my family, and I feel that it's part of my job to help them break it down, being that all of us will reap the benefits from this. I debated the night before I flew into Greenwood, Mississippi, simply because I had a new son, and I hadn't been able to get back to Chicago to see the boy, and Mississippi won out. Because when I lay there and thought that if America had to go to war in the morning, I would be willing to go. And when I can go to any of the four corners of the world, take a chance on losing my life, being away from my loved ones, to guarantee a foreigner a better way of life, I must be able to go and guarantee the Negro a better way of life.
Oh, Diane Carroll, Duke Ellington, June Jordan.
Every one of us, you know, who's witnessed Chicago probably has to recognize that what happened in Chicago was really not shocking. It was not particular to that city in any sense. You know, that we're all living in Chicago, America. And that means that we're living in a place that is, you know, it's consecrated to violence in a sense. And when I say to violence, I mean to the violation of everybody's right to a humanly well-kept and well-spent life. Just consider the Biafran crisis, for example, and the unspeakable inertia of this country, you know, vis-a-vis, you know, the Biafrans and the children there who have been dying. Well, what can you say? You know, it's, I mean, this nation is, you know, by my standards, it's unrecognizable as a human society at this point. It seems to me that it is animal world of technological interests and money purposes, period.
Maya Angelou. Audre Lorde, W.E.B. Du Bois, Ruby Dee, Miles Davis,
Ozzie Davis.
I mean, really amazing stuff. And this is stuff that no one has ever heard. Unless you happen to have been.
Well, yeah, if it was broadcast like in 1969 once at a local station, that's when it was heard. So
right.
it's virtually unheard.
But we should also say that this isn't just like a bunch of speeches. These are casual conversations.
Rallies, documentaries about an event.
Concerts.
Press conferences by Martin Luther King that was never aired.
Yeah, amazing.
And also, I guess we should talk about the Rosa Parks interview, because it's perhaps one of the most important recordings in the archive. It is the first interview with Rosa Parks in 1956 after her release from jail and her arrest.
Which means it was the first, right?
The first, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Pamela Adlon adopted the tape.
Who is one of the stars of Californication on Showtime and the greatest voice, absolutely my favorite thing, Favorite voice in animation, she's Bobby Hill on King of the Hill. So.
Right, so Pamela came to the party a couple years ago and put the money down to make sure that the Rosa Parks interview was digitized and preserved. But after that, again, you know, that's not enough for us in the archives or for you to say that's just it. But so what we wanted to do then was make sure that it went in the right places. So in Dearborn, Michigan, at the Ford Museum of the Auto Club, there the actual bus is there that Rosa Parks actually sat in. So it's part of an exhibit called Liberty and Justice for All. So like sort of school field trips go on and kids get filed through there. Well, instead of having a narrator, an innocuous voice tell the story, that recording is now played inside the bus as people file through. That's actually changing the historic record. It's also now in the academic book about the Montgomery bus boycott. Before, it wasn't available to be put into the history book.
Right, right.
But because of you and because of Pamela and because of our collaboration, we actually are creating history that hasn't been yet studied.
I left work on my way home December 1st, 1955, about 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I boarded the bus downtown in Montgomery on Coates Square. As the bus proceeded out of town, on the third stop, the white passengers had filled the front of the bus. When I got on the bus, the rear was filled with colored passengers, and they were beginning to stand. The seat I occupied was the first of the seats where the Negro passengers take as they on this route. The driver noted that the front of the bus was filled with white passengers and there would be two or three men standing. He looked back and asked that the seat where I had taken, along with three other persons, one in the seat with me and two across the aisle, was seated. He demanded the seats that we were occupying. The other passengers very reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused to do so.
Did you tell her that?
I did.
Whole thing at the party? Because I told her bits, but I didn't say the bit
bus. Yeah, no, I did, and she was just thrilled about it.
God.
And yeah, told me about her child, Ozzy.
Yeah, Ozzy.
She was, had done a book report or a report on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
And,
so it was very important for me to lecture the kids and her kids about the recording and tell them that
too.
Oh,
that's great.
Yeah, yeah. It's
great. I adopted a Martin Luther King in Central Park.
It was the memorial for Martin Luther King Jr. in Central Park. It was the day after he was assassinated in Central Park.
That's the one
That's the one you adopted it, and that's the one with Ossie Davis, Pete Seeger, an opera singer singing, and the entire crowd full of people mourning, raising the fist in Black Power, really confused, and it's Ossie Davis that has the most incredible speech that leaves the entire place speechless.
Wow.
And yeah, that's important because that had never been recorded by anybody else in the world other than Pacifica.
The fact that he was an apostle of love and nonviolence might have led many in the world to mistake his personal courage as a man. But nobody who listened to the last words he said on the night before he was slain can doubt that Martin Luther King was one of the bravest black men we have lost in the struggle. And Martin King left us not only the example of his life and of his thoughts and his philosophies and his teachings, but this is more important to the young people in our country, to the black people in our country. He left us the example of his death. He knew it was coming, and he didn't run. He didn't change. He didn't back down. He went forward and he met it like a black man always meets it. Now, why was Martin Luther King in Memphis? They talk to us about what kind of people we are. They laugh at us because we have to feed our families from what we can get on welfare. They say to us, why do you ask the government to do so much for you and the government hasn't done anything for anybody else? They say that we love welfare, that we are not men, that we don't care for our wives and our children, that we don't want to work. In Memphis, men are trying to work, trying to earn enough to send their kids to schools, to put breads on their tables, and you kill the man! How much, America, do you expect us to bear? There is no time left.
And that does it for this week's From the Vault. Join us next week while we start Women's History Month. This program was written and produced by Mark Torres and Brian DeShazer. The series is executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and your host, Brian DeShazer. And a very special thank you to Allie Willis, that queen of kitsch and the siren of soul, for co-sponsoring the Sound of Soul Adopt-A-Tape Benefit Bash on February 22, 2010. To find out more, visit her online at alliewillis.com. And to find out more about the Sound of Soul collection that is exclusively available through the archives, visit us online at pacificaradioarchives.org. You can also join our new Facebook group, the Allie Willis and Pacifica Radio Archives Sound of Soul group, where you can get a free download of the classic 1956 interview with Rosa Parks and also adopt a school. We are now streaming and podcasting online at FromTheVaultRadio.org. We are now streaming and podcasting online at FromTheVaultRadio.org. For more information, call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's toll-free, 1-800-735-0230. Or visit us online always at PacificaRadioArchives.org. From the Vault is presented as part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, which is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and grants from the Grammy Foundation and the American Archive Pilot Project. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. I've been your host, Brian DeShazer, and thanks for listening.